fallout from the shutdown of the lab where Dukan worked. With IRN USA Radio News, I'm Hope Duggar.
The following program is brought to you by Tim Elins and Paul Edwards.
Welcome to Left, Right, and You with liberal columnist Jeff Ward and conservative public policy activist Alan Skillicorn on WRMN 1410. They're talking current events, politics, local, state, and federal. Your phone calls are always welcome at 847-931-1410, 847-931-1410. Now here's Jeff Ward and Alan Skillicorn and Left, Right, and You.
Welcome to the Thursday, October 17th, 2013 edition of Left, Right, and You. This is your Prince of Principles, Alan Skillicorn.
It's Thursday already.
And this is...
Jeff Ward.
Yes, Jeff Ward, the loon of the left.
Yeah, you get Monday off and your whole week gets skewed.
And you can always find... You can almost find this podcast either at...
TheFirstWard.net, all spelled out.
Or AlanSkillicorn.com.
And multiple links to it, of course, on our Facebook page, the Left, Right, and You Facebook fan page.
/ groups, Left, Right, and You. You'll find it every time.
And, hey, you know, we're hoping to get Illinois State Rep Mike Fortner to call in today. But next week, we have a really cool guest, Alan. And his name is Reza Aslan. And he is the author of...
Kind of controversial.
Yes. But he is the author of the runaway best-selling book, Zealot, The Life and Times of Jesus of Nazareth. It's one of the best books I've ever read. And we will have him for a full half hour. So I know we don't usually announce our guests multiple weeks in advance, but this is kind of big. He's been on Real Time and all sorts of political talk shows, and he wrote a great book. So that's next week. This week, of course.
Did anything happen while we were gone?
Yeah, the Tea Party imploded and is basically meaningless.
You mean Washington, D.C. imploded and it's basically meaningless.
Well, they've been that way for a while. But as you know, this seems a bit too much to me like political theater. I think in the end it turned into the Ted Cruz show. I think he is going to regret what he did. But when you look at the numbers coming out of the shutdown in Washington, it doesn't look good for Republicans or the Tea Party. And thankfully, some of the saner Republicans are lamenting
it. I don't think it looks good for Washington, D.C. I don't think it looks good for big government. I think we've basically proven that people don't need a government. Individuals matter, right?
We do. This stuff was starting to filter down. They were
We furloughed a few employees, and the world didn't stop.
They were talking about shutting down Fermilab, for God's sake. I mean, this thing...
Maybe it should be privately funded.
Well, I think it should be. My theory on Fermilab is it's outlived its usefulness.
But here's the thing. We had a few furloughed employees.
More than a few.
And it really wasn't a big deal. Now, the media... blew this out of proportion, tried to make a big deal of it.
But there are all sorts of women, infant, and children suffered, and those programs...
Show me women,
veterans,
children, and infant that suffered.
There's the WIC program. They have them all over the country that provide formula for infants. And that shut down.
And that's not something churches can't handle and charities can't handle?
No,
pantries can't handle?
No, they are overwhelmed.
No food pantries. They cannot handle it.
No, they can't handle the whole thing. The Larkin Center in Elgin announced yesterday they're closing. I mean, they've been around since...
And is that a symptom of a few furloughed employees?
No.
Or is that a symptom of a greater problem? We have a government that does too much.
The Larkin Center has nothing to do with the federal shutdown.
Okay, well, don't confuse it then.
No.
That's just misleading, Jeff.
No.
You just mislead it. There's thousands of our listeners that were like, they closed it because of the furlough.
I answered your question as to whether...
But you didn't answer it. You said something that was completely false.
No, the Larkin Center is closing. If you ever let me finish... The Larkin Center is closing because their resources were stretched. There are no more. Churches can't do everything. Private citizens need to do more because money in the hands of a social service agency goes a lot farther.
Can I tell you a lesson? So, a lesson that I learned. I had some good friends of mine that became missionaries in the Czech Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And this was after, they became a free nation and after the fall, the fall of the Iron Curtain.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a home for people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this idea that, hey, we're going to go and help this place out. So they went over there and said, how can we help you? And they had no idea. Because basically they have been under two generations of people, individuals who didn't help each other out. They relied on the government. So it was a situation where they've gotten used to the government would take care of people. And they ask people on the street, hey, would you like to come and volunteer at the home over there? They would go, why would we want to do that? That's the government's job.
Right.
Well, that's the deal. When we slip into this idea that we can do cradle to grave care of everyone, the socialist idea.
No, but Hubert Humphrey
those problems.
Said, basically, you know, we will be judged by how we treat the least of our brothers. And the Bible,
shouldn't we encourage individuals instead of the government?
You're already talking over me. The Bible says, how you treat the least of my brothers, you treat me.
But the Bible didn't say, let's steal the money from the rich and give it to the poor. They said, individuals should go do this.
Well,
and
they weren't. The Bible isn't that.
No, it doesn't say that.
It said feed the poor. It didn't say individuals feed the poor. It didn't say corporations feed the poor. It just said
feed the poor. But it didn't say the man should feed the poor either.
All I'm answering is your question, Alan. Your question, isn't there enough in the private sector? No, there isn't. And so,
but you, what, we have really distracted off the slowdown. This is not about the furlough.
No.
And you know what? I want to point out the furlough really wasn't a big deal. Take a look at this chart here of the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
That's because
the stock market is higher during the furlough than before it began.
No, I've watched it. The stock market dropped.
The stock market is the stock market today, a couple hours ago, was at 15,000 Dow Jones Industrial Average.
Right.
But they all kind of track the same. It was at 15,336. On September 30th, it was at 15,125.
But that's because it had already anticipated the
stock market was higher yesterday during furlough than it is today.
Yeah, that is not a fair comparison.
Before furlough and after furlough, the stock market is up.
But the stock, whoa, Alan, you are wrong. The stock market factors things in 2 to 3 weeks or 2 to 3 months ahead of time. So all we are is back where we were before this whole shebang started.
Except if you look at the numbers. And you know what? People can judge for themselves. I'm gonna put that chart on my website and let our listeners take a look at it on my show notes page.
But give me the chart there, buddy, because we got to go back a few weeks before the furlough, and you know we're about September 20th when all this stuff was starting to form.
On October 9th, we actually eclipsed our pre-furlough numbers,
and now we're right back to where we were.
And we're a couple hundred points higher than our pre-furlough numbers.
Pre-furlough, but the furlough, you can't judge the stock market that way. The stock market factors in uncertainty ahead of time. That's why it also went back up before the furlough ended, because it became clear there was going to be a deal.
It actually went back up because Obama appointed a new pro-print money Fed chair.
No, it went back up because everybody knew a deal was going to happen. The insiders knew. Warren Buffett, people were going crazy, and these senators said, look, it's going to happen. Anyway, we have a caller, Dave.
Yes, you're listening to Left, Right, and You on WRMN 1410, and we have Todd on the line. Todd, you're on Left, Right, and You with Alan and Jeff.
Hey, Todd.
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing well. Here, let me throw some sanity into this. When you talk about the Bible, and the Bible tells me, Todd, you give your coat to the poor. He does not say, Todd, vote for a representative who will take the coat from somebody else and hand it to him. It never says that. And it's just insanity to think otherwise. The Bible never tells governments how to act. It always tells
Todd, are you saying the collectivists are lazy and they want the government
to
do it for them?
Todd, you're utterly wrong. Jesus took on the government as it stood in Roman and otherwise wholeheartedly. Jesus was the scion of the poor. Even Reza Aslan's book talks about how Jesus of Nazareth continually tried to force government as well as individuals into doing more to deal with the poor.
No, he never did. The only comment Jesus makes in regard to the government, he says, hand me a coin. Whose picture's on the coin? It's Caesar's. Then you need to pay your taxes. That's all he ever says about it. He always does say, feed the poor. Do this. Todd, do it. He doesn't say government do it. It's always,
you're wrong.
So if it doesn't fit Jeff's narrative, he has to say someone's wrong. And you know what?
He does have a point. The Bible
he does have a point.
Says feed the poor. It doesn't say corporations.
Todd, thank you very much for your phone call, by the way.
I'll point out that when Yahweh goes into my heart, He wants my heart to be softened, and he wants me to be generous with my resources.
Absolutely.
He doesn't ask me to take a gun to my neighbor's head, make him pay higher taxes, so he's generous.
Absolutely. And my preference...
And you forget, you know, George Washington once says that government is not eloquent, it is force. And by having the government handle social welfare, what it does is basically say people who don't want to pay hard, or people who don't want to be generous, it forces them to do it. Basically, it takes the place of God.
I would much
and
rather...
And that is not... Look at the Ten Commandments. That is not right.
But the Bible, Jesus continually takes on...
Individuals.
I'm going to have to stop you. You're cutting me off way too much. He takes on individuals. He takes on the government.
But
he does both.
He doesn't. Jeff, you're not even a believer. How are you getting into this?
Because theology was my best subject in college.
Do you believe that Jesus is the Messiah?
No.
So it's like a vegetarian telling me how to cook steak.
No, it isn't. I wasn't always a vegetarian. What I'm saying is that I would much rather individuals.
Well, why don't we help individuals doing it by lowering taxes?
Do this thing. Oh, I'm a fiscal hawk, dude. Come on, you forget that sometimes.
Except when your president's in charge.
I'm not exactly happy with some of this stuff, and I've been clear about that. But the bottom line is Republicans and many conservatives love to live by the Bible until it comes time to feed the poor, until it comes time to give their coat to a neighbor. And if more individuals did it, you're absolutely right. We would not.
I'll be first saying, but let's say what 67% of the culture says they're Christians, but they don't. They profess to be Christians, but they don't act like it. They don't
and
act
that
like
is
it. That's a
my
big
point.
Deal.
I am not advocating for the government to do this. However, I do agree with what Hubert.
But do you see
said.
My point that?
No, absolutely.
Do you see my point that when government does it for people, they don't feel compelled to?
If it goes as far as communism, you're absolutely right. And that's when they're talking Czech Republic. I mean, they didn't know how to react.
So that's where you draw the line.
They didn't know how to react business-wise when they were set free. They had no clue. And the schism between East and West Germany was incredible because a lot of West Germans felt like the East were deadbeats. And that has shifted. You're right. There is a mindset if it goes too far. But the flip side, Alan, is there are some folks out there who have serious family issues which can bankrupt them, which are much more than...
But you mentioned bankruptcy. Bankruptcy is a plan to solve some of those problems. It's not inherently evil or bad, but it is a plan...
And they even taken the teeth out of bankruptcy. Some Republicans were...
definitely school loans and things like that.
So my point is, yes, if we fed the poor, as the Bible said, and you don't have to be a Christian to know that... The government probably could do a hell of a lot less and stay out of it, but it doesn't happen. And some folks are in such dire straits, especially with disabilities, that there needs to be some safety net to keep them from going too far.
Now, did you know that we have a representative on the line?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay. So I just want to quickly – we're going to transition to more state – you know, obviously we're going to talk about the federal stuff later, but since it's done and is it solved, I don't know. But we're going to go to Illinois – which is, I think it's indicative of where our country's headed, because there's a fiscal mess here. And I think the fiscal mess in Washington is going to get worse, going to be a lot more like Illinois. But we brought in Representative Mike Fortner, who he'll tell us what district he represents. But basically, he's DuPage County and a little bit of Kane County. So, Mike, can you hear us?
It's the 95th.
I hear you. Yes.
See, I'm informed, Alan. Hey, Mike.
It's glad to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
I'm glad to be here.
And before we get into pensions and stuff, what is going on? Basically, you're going back to session in about a week. Tell us what you think is going to be happening.
Well, at this point, we don't know that there's a lot happening for sure. There's a very small number of bills that the governor issued vetoes on over the summer. And the purpose of the fall session is called the veto session because it's when we take up those vetoes and decide whether or not they should be sustained or overridden. So that's one thing that will go on. Beyond that, it's not clear what other bills might come up for debate and potential votes. But right now we haven't heard anything specific.
And everybody's talking about pensions and the conference committee. Kind of give us some your thoughts on that.
Well, I've been looking at the pension issue for going on 5 years now, offering a number of different solutions, some of which parts of which have been taken up, some of which have even made it into law, some parts of which have made it into other people's proposals. But what I think that we should keep in mind is that what you really want to do is to separate two different problems that exist. One is a liability that has accrued because largely the legislature has not kept up with its payments. Instead, use that money to spend on other projects it wanted to do rather than keep up with the liability payments. The second thing is that we have a current cost structure due to our current employees, and you need to make sure that that can be stabilized and can work going forward. So those are two separate questions, and I think, in my mind, there's really two different ways to look at it because you want to solve each of those to get at the core of each of those problems.
But, Mike, is there really any hope? I mean, Republicans seem so ineffectual. And I know Allen wants to set up Illinois as a kind of a microcosm of the federal government, but I think we're unique when you include the Democratic machine in Chicago. But between Squeezy the Python and, you know, freezing your salary, I don't know if anything's going to happen until the straits are even more dire.
It's interesting that you brought up Squeezy the Python because according to CONFA, that's our independent group that does fiscal forecasting for the legislature, each of the next 2 years, the proportion of the state's budget that will go to pension actually is scheduled to go down. Even though the total amount goes up, it'll be going up by an amount that's forecast to be less than the natural growth of the overall revenue. So we got hit by a number of particularly bad pieces of news, including some one-time charges we had to take because we had overly optimistic forecasts put in. And we've taken those hits. And, in fact, the next couple of years, though the pensions are still large, it's a big part of the budget, needs to be addressed. It's not as consuming a problem, in my opinion, as it was. Still needs to be fixed, though.
Mike, so
actually the best news we've heard.
It's interesting that you ended that with it still needs to be fixed, though, because my question was, well, if revenue is up, if the stock market performance is up, and you know, and more matching to what the projections are, you know, do we have to do anything? But it sounds like you still want to do something.
I do, because there's still these two issues. One, there's the accrued liability. We have about $100 billion of accrued liability for which we do not have assets to support. Now, the good news, if there's any in that, is that we don't have to pay it off tomorrow. We can pay it off over 30 years. And what I have been proposing is to take advantage of pension bonds that were sold to cover some of the pension costs during the 2000s. And as those bonds mature, take the principal after you're done and just go ahead and start using that to pay directly down towards the liability rather than going spending on something else. I would say it's not unlike if you had a home mortgage payment and a car payment and you finish off paying off the car rather than take that money and spending it on a vacation or some other non-necessary expense, take that same amount, and you can use that to pay down your mortgage faster.
Mm-hmm. So I want to remind the listeners.
You get this out of the woods.
I want to remind listeners that we're listening to Representative Mike Fortner. This is Alan Skilcorn. This is Jeff Ward. This is Left, Right, and You on WRMN. And Mike, it's interesting the picture that you paint, and it's also interesting that some of this pension reform, which to some people, you know, especially if you were part of a union member, you're not a fan of, and it's the Democrats that are pushing this. Is there like a greater agenda going on? Why are Democrats going after their own unions?
Well, I don't know why they'd be going after the unions, but I do know that there are some large expenses headed Illinois way. One of those is that due to health care expansion, there's going to be an increase in the Medicaid rolls, part of which we're going to have to pick up the costs, and those are large costs. And even though the legislature has, for the last 2 years, been sending, in a bipartisan fashion, bills that would help create reductions in Medicaid costs elsewhere in the system, the governor has not executed anywhere near the amount of options governor to do, and therefore we haven't realized that much savings yet. And so one of my concerns is that what we're really doing is we would simply be using this to cover those other costs rather than use the tools that the legislature has already given the governor within the program itself.
So you think they want to take about $1 billion a year out of their pension payments and to send it over to, is it Medicaid expansion?
Well, under the Medicaid expansion, that's the part the state would likely pick up through the Affordable Care Act. Yeah, something on the order of $1 billion is some of the estimates that we've seen that we're going to likely have to pick up.
But not in the early stages of the program. The early stages, the federal government will pick up those expanded costs.
Not for those who, as you're going to the website, it sorts you out. And if it finds that you already qualify for current Medicaid, the state picks up those costs.
Ah, I got you, Mike.
And Jeff, it does phase out. I mean, it starts in just a couple years.
I said that for the first 3 years.
Yeah, but
that doesn't help us for those who now have to have coverage. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, they've chosen not to be in Medicaid but would have qualified. When they are directed and it finds that they would have qualified under existing rules, those are just traditional Medicaid, and the state would assume the normal Medicaid costs there.
So it's ironic that they want to cut COLAs and cut pension benefits so that they can basically dole out more money to Medicaid.
Well, and that's certainly one way to look at the connection. I just know that there's this cost coming, and there is certainly $1 billion a year is the kind of number that has been floated around by the conference committee plan.
Yeah, it's the same amount.
Well, and Mike, to shift gears a little bit, a Taxpayers United America, American United, what's the group with Jim Tobin, Allen?
Yeah, Taxpayers United.
Taxpayers United recently named their five Illinois friends. Okay, of course they wouldn't name their sixth, which would, because he was a Democrat. Jack Franks also kind of fit in there, but only five Illinois Republicans five Springfield Republicans got their nod for being friends of the taxpayer. And while Taxpayers United can be a little extreme, it was, of course, Patricia Bellick, 47th, Paul Evans, 102nd, Chad Hayes, 104th, Jill Tracy, 93rd, and, of course, Mike Fortner, 95th. My question, Mike, is, I know you're certainly in the minority down in Springfield, but, my God, why aren't more Republicans on that list?
You know, I can't speak for some of my colleagues. Everyone is representing their district and what they think are those interests. I know that I have a lot of taxpayers in my district, so I look often to, the questions of the kind of burden that we have here in the central Fox Valley in the district I represent.
And I'll point out, knowing Mike, he is not extreme. You know, he is,
right.
I don't want to call him moderate because people will take offense to that. But, he's definitely not some extreme. He didn't go along with the, some of the pension, cut plans. I mean, he actually voted against the one that came to the House.
But the reason I ask you, Mike, is I know this is hard to believe, but Alan and I have been having an argument, and it started online this time, where I claim that the tax and spend Republicans right here on school boards and locally are a far worse influence than anybody in Washington, D.C., because Mitt Romney was right, although it's more not like 43% of Americans don't pay income tax, but we all pay property taxes. So,
what does the former mayor of West Chicago have to say about that?
The former mayor of West Chicago would point out that when he took office, the tax rate was 81 cents per hundred for the city, and when he left, it was 43 cents per hundred.
Well, you're one of those rare Republicans, Mike, that doesn't tax and spend.
Now, here's a question, Mike, and we've had this fun debate before. Is a lot of that because there was growth in West Chicago, or is that because of, cutting and slashing everywhere?
Actually, it was reallocating resources, I think, in a more efficient way. We actually increased the number of police on the street. We successfully built a major water treatment plant, but we also reworked our zoning codes and our processes to be more attractive to bring business to the community, and made some other efficiencies internally where we thought we really weren't using some personnel as efficiently as we could.
Well, could you give Mayor Burns of Geneva a quick call about that, Mike?
Mayor Burns and I are old friends. We actually took office as mayors the same year, and I know he is certainly aware of stuff that I did when I was in West Chicago, and if he wants to use it, he's always welcome.
Well, he's one of those tax and spend Republicans I've been railing against, but I think we are up against our break, Mike, unless you had another question or two, Alan.
I do not. Mike, where can people find you and find out about your pension plan?
Yeah, my pension plan, if you go to MikeFortner.org, MikeFortner is all one word, .org, that's my website. You'll see up at the top the pension, it's pension PowerPoint. This is the PowerPoint of my plan that I presented to the Pension Conference Committee just this last summer.
All right.
Thank you very much, Representative,
you,
for joining
Mike.
Us.
Sure.
Well, thank you for having me.
No problem.
And this is Left, Right, and You on WRMN, and we're going to go to break. So last night I couldn't sleep. So I got my laptop going. And fortunately, when you're sitting in bed, it gets hot, doesn't have a good airflow. You know, even though it's a cool night, it's still uncomfortable.
Well, have I got the solution for you? I invented a product called the Lapinator. And you can go to www.lapinator.com. It is a laptop.
You might have to spell that.
Lapinator. I found out in French it means rabbit killer, but, you know, so much for brand name testing.
Yeah, you're not going to be very popular in France.
No, not in France. But basically what the Lapinator is, Ellen, it's a portable insulated laptop desk that not only keeps 95% of laptop heat off your lap, so I don't have to get the fire extinguisher out every time you use your laptop, but it keeps your laptop 11 degrees cooler with no moving parts. So, hey.
That's great. And heat does damage electronics.
We sell all our products through Amazon, so, you know, you can get shipping free. Go to www.lapinator.com, www.lapinator.com.
Hi, this is Alan Skillicorn. Here's a reminder that Odyssey Forge offers creative, custom, and unique internet solutions. Looking for more security or two-factor verification? Odyssey Forge has a solution for you. Do you want a custom WordPress site? Odyssey Forge can customize the popular platform. What about secure e-commerce? Odyssey Forge will develop an attractive site easy to use for you and your customers. Check out www.odysseyforge.com or see my Odyssey Forge-powered site, alanskillicorn.com.
Got that summertime sadness. Oh,
Lana Del Rey, that's a good song.
And we're back. This is Left, Right, and You on WRMN. And I just want to point out that, you know, you're writing some book.
Right.
And you're not blogging so much. But I want to tell people they can go to alanskillicorn.com. And I've got a load of stuff that I put on my website. You know, we're going to talk about property taxes, I believe.
Yeah.
So there's actually an article on my website about why Chicago property taxes are so much lower than the suburbs. And there's, you know, and there's controversial stuff on there. We're talking about the, you know, the EBT card people that ransacked the Walmart, and I call them EBT thugs. So there's some controversial stuff on there too.
Yeah, but and again, Walmart, what galls me about Walmart is they wanted ridiculous tax breaks. Walmart doesn't. And the school board, the Chicago school board, are the
ones
that rebelled
against this case, they
it.
Gave away thousands of dollars of food to people that they aren't going to get reimbursed for. So,
but anyway, but let's get back to the fallout from the shutdown. And since we got
Can I read a friend of our show, Charlie Kirk, posted on Facebook either last night or this morning. Can I read this off?
You'll
appreciate this. And it basically says, I'm as conservative or libertarian as it gets, but can someone please explain to me what we accomplished by shutting the government down, except then, you know, ruining and trashing the Republican brand? Did we get any entitlement for them? Tax code changes? Spending cuts? Did we delay the medical device tax? Did we get the Keystone Pipeline? Did we defund Obamacare? Please tell me what we accomplished by the slowdown.
And, well,
you might appreciate that.
I do appreciate it. And you know, one of my biggest fears is I think Democrats do tax and spend too much. And the Tea Partiers, by their incessant inability to recognize collateral damage, are bringing about what they fear the most. And if you look at these polls, Alan, they don't look...
Well, let's look at Tea Partiers. Because I think they're... You know, the media loves to go, oh, Tea Parties, make a big deal of it. But there's, you know, there's... And typically, the Tea Party movement, a lot of it has kind of died out in a sense.
Well, the wackiest of the Tea Parties.
But there's, you know, the people that are left are typically people that are just frustrated. You know, most everyone is frustrated.
Right.
And these are people that are speaking out, and they don't know how every detail works. They don't know what goes on in the trenches.
And regular politicians...
So I have a hard time blaming them.
Regular politicians make the same mistake. I got to tell you, as you know, ever since I've been a columnist, I've counseled politicians. And the one thing I continually counsel them on is how to get what they want. And it's not always a straight path. Because when you look at these numbers, 49% of Americans now view the Tea Party unfavorably. 27% of moderate and liberal Republicans now view the Tea Party favorably.
It doesn't sound any different than what I've heard before.
These are huge. The 49% isn't all that different, but the other ones are huge 20%, 15% shifts. 31% of non-Tea Party Republicans now view Ted Cruz unfavorably. I believe it was about 17% before. 74% of Republicans disapprove of the shutdown tactics, meaning 74% of Republican voters. And two-thirds of Americans blame the GOP for a shutdown. Charlie's right.
This is where I think
for the Republican Party.
See, I look at politics more of a historical.
12% hate Tom Cruise, by the way.
I think it's more than
that. Yeah, it might be higher than that. But I tend to look at a bigger picture, a more historical picture. I don't think people are partisan. I don't think people as ideological as you and I, Jeff.
No, they're not.
You know, most people are not.
I absolutely agree with that. But
this doesn't really show anything different than that, because most people, I think, are in the middle, and they're just frustrated.
But, well, yes and no, Alan. Yes, they're frustrated, but you have to know how to get things done. If you're going to play with the big cats, you have to know what to do. Big dogs, big cats. And they don't, and I believe
meow.
My fear is... See, I want you to hear me. I'm not just trashing them, though I'm good at it. My fear is their ineffectiveness is going to bring about exactly what they fear. And there were some crazy Tea Party quotes out there during the shutdown. Most of it from Indiana. I mean, Marlon Stutzman told the Washington Examiner, this has been widely reported, we have to get something out of this. And we're not going to be disrespected. We have to get something out of this. And I don't even know what that, and I don't know what that even is. That's insane to say.
Sounds more like a leaderless party than anything else to me.
That's wacky. Steve King, who's a lunatic, said, if you spend within your means, you spend no more than what you bring in, and you will have the best credit rating. That's not true.
Well, I wonder if he just made a simple mistake there, Jeff.
That's not
because if you do spend within your means...
You don't need credit, and you have no credit rating.
That's not quite true.
It absolutely is true.
If you've got money in the bank, any bank will lend money to you.
Well, yes, but if you want to get...
If you've got something of value,
credit,
they will lend you money on it.
Any college advisor is going to recommend, get a credit card, put some money on it, pay it back, so you start the process of developing your...
And the key to that is the pay it back. If you don't pay it back, you're trying to get, credit agencies looking for bill payment history so that you don't have a cell phone, you have a monthly bill, or you don't have a gas bill, you don't have a monthly bill. That's your biggest component. So as someone who was a college student once and someone that had to boost their credit, I'll tell you what, paying that on time monthly makes a huge difference.
And I completely agree, but you have to borrow money to start that process, essentially.
Not necessarily. You can pay your gas bill and pay your cell phone bill.
That's okay, but I remember when I couldn't get credit cards because I had done it that way.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've got an over 800 credit score, and I have no consumer debt, no car loan, nothing.
And mine is 800 plus as well.
Yeah, that's because of that. I don't have that debt.
But and then Representative Ted Yoho said that basically in regards to defaulting, I think personally it would bring stability to the world markets. And it wouldn't. I mean, China has got to be chomping at the bit for the yuan to become
Here's an interesting
and
point.
And to take our leadership role.
Did we fix the problems we have with our economy and our markets back in the 2009 crash? No. we preemptively bailed things out to make it more stable. But we still have an inherent issue with bubbles and such.
Right.
And we've got a situation. We've got a Federal Reserve that just prints billions of dollars every week. And it is, but here's the other issue, is that it hurts real people. It hurts people with limited resources. It hurts people on fixed incomes because prices are skyrocketing.
Absolutely.
You know, look at Social Security.
Government shutdowns.
It's
going to
go up
too.
Not as much as printing money.
I think you'd be surprised.
Look at Social Security. Mm. People are going to get a 1.5% bump next year. Yet gas is over 100% higher than just 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Look at the price of milk. Look at the price of food. You know, unfortunately, when they do these inflation numbers, they don't look at fuel costs. They don't look at food costs. And to be honest, I think it's intentional. And it's a scam on people of limited resources. It's great for people like you and me who know how to invest, mm-hmm. but it really hurts people who have less money.
Absolutely. But, Alan, if the Tea Party is so ineffective that they bring about the opposite, and I'm talking federal Tea Party. We've had some good Tea Partiers on this show. Carol, I can't remember her last name, mm-hmm. who I proposed marriage to, though she did turn me down. Of course, it was a problem that I was already married. My fear, I want the listeners to hear this again, is that by playing this kind of brinksmanship, by saying such silly things.
Wait a second. Isn't it just as silly to call this, you know, terrorism or hostage taking?
Oh, absolutely.
And use that kind of...
I think it is a little bit of hostage taking.
But you're using the terms. I mean, I think that people that are using those terms are just as silly as you guys you pointed out.
No, I don't think so. Not nearly. However, we've got to have an intelligent debate. Even John McCain said, look...
John McCain stopped being intelligent and relevant for a long time.
Well, to some degree. But I think even he's a little taken aback by this. Back in September, he essentially said, look, if the American people didn't want Obamacare, Mitt Romney would be president. I'm paraphrasing.
Let's go back to the historical context. Let's go back to 1995 and that three-week shutdown.
Right.
If we look at Newt Gingrich's slowdown there, it really had little to no effect. People talk about having a huge effect, but let's look at next year was the presidential election. Mm-hmm. Bill Clinton won that presidential election, but usually in a presidential election, the president and or the Democratic Party has quite a bit of coattails. So let's look at that. The Republicans lost two seats in the House in 1996. To be honest, during a presidential year, especially when the Democrat president, Bill Clinton, won, that's a very small effect.
But number one, Newt Gingrich had a plan. You recall the Contract with America.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
But that was back in 94, yeah.
It was very specific. That shutdown, at least there was a plan. They didn't go to, we don't want Obamacare, to the debt, to, we've got to get something out of this. And it did end Newt Gingrich's political career for all intents and purposes. It really did.
Well, I think that his strategy of trying to do the impeachment probably ended his career.
I'm going to give you that. But the shutdown,
his career might have been on tail end anyways.
So, but in any event, I do think David Frum... You know David Frum,
I mean,
big Republican strategist, basically says if Republicans ever want any shot at the White House again, they have to disown the Tea Party. And I agree.
To be honest, I think that a year from now, this will be barely a blip on the radar.
Well, I think they're going to do it again, Alan. I think they're going to do it in
February. Here is actually something that's kind of interesting. And did you read this article in Forbes? I'm showing it to you because the title is very big. But it's why President Obama will have to delay his health insurance mandate.
And I agree now.
So the individual mandate will probably be delayed.
And it should be now.
So, oh my God. You know what is hilarious? I don't have the author's name on here. But the author basically argued that come next spring, because of the problems in the system,
right,
that the president will voluntarily get rid of the individual mandate, just because it's not working.
Right. And the difference, the reason I'm surprised you didn't go, Jeff, my God, what are you? Is this your evil twin? The reason I've shifted on that is the evidence. Now we have evidence that it's difficult to sign up.
Well, it is compelling that, you know, we're forcing people to buy something from a website that they can't purchase it on, and then we're going to fine them.
The other fascinating thing is I forget, this was somebody on Real Time last week, Bill Maher, one of the guests said, you know what, Republicans and Tea Party blew it. If they had waited for these problems, they could have been the knights in shining armor. They
possibly
may have even defunded Obamacare.
Possibly.
But because the Tea Partiers are so rabid and don't understand how to play the game.
Now, Ted Cruz's filibuster brought a lot of awareness to this. As I argued last week and 2 weeks ago, once basically the October 1st came along, which was 2.5 weeks ago, It basically proved that President Obama was willing to go to the mat for his signature beloved law.
Now, I would say he's willing to go to the mat to stop this debt ceiling crap, but go ahead.
Well, obviously on October 1st, it was proven that he wasn't going to budge.
Right.
And at that point in time, it was written on the wall that he was going to go to the mat for and he wasn't going to do anything. At that point in time, and I mentioned this 2 weeks ago, the Republicans should have passed a CR, you know, a continuing resolution that had every bit of funding in it except for like one thing. And I just pointed out PBS. Just take PBS out and go, here's what you want. We need to cut. Don't even say anything. Just pass it.
I disagree with PBS.
Would have been like a 50-50. The Senate would have probably passed it, and the president would have signed it. And then they would have won something.
Absolutely.
Now, look at this. This thing that passed last night, this abortion that passed last night, is horrible. It's got $3 billion worth of earmarks on it. It's worse than what we had before.
Right. Absolutely.
So Mitch McConnell got $2.4 billion. We got millionaire ex-wives of congressmen getting $100,000 bailouts part of this. It's ridiculous. You know what, though? Democrats should be ashamed that's what they stuck to. I mean, instead of going, okay, what was the argument? We wanted a clean CR, right? They changed their mind last week.
Mitch McConnell ain't exactly
but don't forget,
a Democrat.
They tried to reverse the sequester, which has had no effect on the economy. It's actually, in retrospect, it's actually been a decent thing. You know, it's not as aggressive as I would be, but it hasn't hurt anything.
No.
It's cut spending a tiny little bit.
But and I don't blame
but
him.
So
with Tea Party,
the president made a huge deal about the sequester. It hasn't hurt anything. It's not been a big deal. So what happens a week ago? The Senate Democrats try to go, oh, we've got to get rid of the sequester. And we're not going to sign anything unless we get rid of that.
I think that was a little bit more of, we have to offer something we can give away, which Tea Partiers still don't understand.
Well, it's a little disingenuous.
I don't know. I mean, when the Tea Partiers are just going for broke, you have to you throw something in.
Adding $3 billion of earmarks is a sad way to run the country.
Republicans, as you pointed out.
Well, lot of them. Most of them go, and Mitch McConnell, I mean, we can give him the Dingbat of the Week award. You have your what the bleep are you thinking award?
Does
he get it this week?
I would give it to Mitch McConnell. I would give it to the Tea Partiers and Mitch McConnell.
They're two separate camps.
I know
they don't get along.
No. I'm saying it's a tie. It's two separate groups.
Oh, it's
of
a
people.
Tie. Okay,
it's a tie. But we talked a little bit about this with Representative Fortner, and we got into it with a couple fans on the Facebook fan page that. This myth, this fallacy. I mean, Mitt Romney was actually right, though it's closer to 43%. 43% of Americans don't pay income tax.
Oh, that's the most offensive thing I've ever heard, Jeff. Yeah.
And though I read it in Time magazine, and as the Bush tax cuts kind of have shifted and as tax cuts expire, that number will go down if those tax cuts expire, so let's be fair. But the bottom line is I did a little more research, and taking New Jersey as an example, 10% of the average New Jerseyan's income goes to property tax, only 1.5% to income tax. On a tax website I found in Illinois, the average Illinoisan pays 50% more in property taxes than income tax. Alan pointed out that...
Hold on. We're talking about property taxes here, but I want to just remind listeners that this is WRMN. AM 1410, and this is Left, Right, and You. That's Jeff Ward. This is Alan Skillicorn, and we are going to now enter property tax hell.
Yeah, and you rightfully pointed out, and I've known this on the Facebook fan page, you put up a graphic, McHenry, Kendall, and Kane County, not in that order. It's actually Kendall, McHenry,
which I think Lake is the highest.
And Kane. And Lake is a little more Democratic these days. Are the 28th, 29th, and 30th taxed counties in the nation. In the nation. And they're Republican counties. And I know you may disagree with me, but school boards around here, with few exceptions, some in Elgin, some in Aurora, are staffed by are Republicans. The local Republicans, once they're in office, city councils, that's Geneva is a prime example. Any of the Tri-Cities is an example. The second they get into office, they raise your property taxes.
So are you saying that Veronica Noland on U46 board is a Republican?
No, I just accepted Elgin.
Okay.
Accepted Elgin.
Well, the way you made it sound like except for a few.
And that's
right. Like they're mostly Republican on the U46 board.
No,
mostly Republican.
No, 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 no. There's You know, you go into all the cities, North Aurora, Geneva, St. Charles, Batavia, the Caneville School District. These are, you know, Jim Oberweis's son was on the Caneville.
I can't comment on Geneva because I don't know. But right. I can tell you from U46 perspective, that's all Democrats up until recently.
Well, Frank Napoleon was
up until last March. My current District 300 is all Democrats.
And U46 balanced their budget, God bless them. So.
Well, there's also a legal requirement, too. So.
Well, I mean, they've done a reasonable job. And this, I am still waiting. And, yes, you are an exception. Chris Lowes is County Chairman Chris Lowson is an exception.
Okay.
He has held the property tax flat. The budget's virtually done. But you know, two of our fans were arguing that, no, you pay more in federal taxes. That is patently false. Or that it was the result of Democrats. And Kendall County is really, really bad, Ellen, because they have been Republican.
But, you know, I've said that before, and actually, factually, I'm wrong, because I know I personally pay about 25% of my income taxes. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's a little lower than that. And the property taxes I pay are a little smaller than that, and they're deductible. Mm-hmm. But from what I can control, property taxes are much more significant. I can't control my federal taxes. I hardly can control my state taxes. But property taxes, I have a more direct, right. You know, kind of control, even though it's very hard to overturn the school board, and that's
right.
What a driver is. But it's more equal than you imagine. And I remember saying on the show back when I was a guest, and I remember previously Paul Edwards, you know, he got all upset at me when I said that. And in reality, most people pay a little more in income than property taxes, especially because property is deductible from your burden.
Not right now, though, but not right
now.
With the Bush tax cuts, right now we are paying my property tax bill on my house is like $8,000. That's far more than
I paid $3,000 more in income tax last year than property tax.
I pay.
But part of that is because I can deduct the property tax from my taxes.
I'm one of those people that doesn't. I pay some income tax, but not much.
And high income owners might see more of that.
Yeah.
It all depends. It's not easy. Some people have really big houses. Some people live beyond their means. Some people live in small houses and make a lot of money. It's real hard to do
but
that.
But the bottom line is the biggest chunk of change is probably going to be to your school board.
That's correct. So, Jeff, are you frustrated that local Republicans don't do enough?
Yeah, absolutely. I am thoroughly I'm frustrated that the Tea Party won't take these.
Are you frustrated that they aren't conservative enough?
I am fiscally, yes.
I agree with you. I agree. Local Republicans should be more like Ted Cruz.
This is terrifying. Well, I won't go that far.
By the way,
we have a caller.
We have a caller who believes this is a one-party state. Okay. And you're on Left Right of You.
Hello, one-party state.
Well, yeah, this is the other Jeff. And yes,
I was going to say, is this Jeff? I know you. Go ahead, Jeff.
Here's the thing. Yeah, everybody has good ideas in both parties. The problem is we've turned into a one-party state. And most one-party state and one-party country. And you know this as well as I do. It is. Because there is a darn thing the Republicans in this country can do to either stop it in the state or the national level.
Wait a minute.
Because they're getting everything. They're getting everything.
I will agree that Illinois...
I'm sick and tired of it.
Illinois is a one-party state, yes, the Democrats. And I rail against that all the time. The federal government, however, we've just proved it is not a one-party thing. However, the other party isn't effective.
Even though, don't forget, the right, the Republicans, or the conservatives, only have one half of one-third of the government.
Right.
They've only controlled the House. They don't control the Senate. They don't control the courts. The courts should be independent. And then the executive branch.
Right.
Okay, so they only have a small piece of the puzzle. And this is what conservatives should learn from this, is they don't control they don't control the party. You know, they don't control the system.
Here's my philosophy, but I know, or here's my statement. This is what I've been saying to people that are all hot and bothered about stuff. Okay, we have a couple of choices. Okay, next year we all vote for, you know, senators and, you know, the change. Either vote all Democrats in, all Republicans in, or start a third party, because this crap's got to stop. It hurts people in the pockets, and they're both responsible for it. And the biggest move is our president, all right? The guy could have done something. Instead, he badmouths. I listened to his speech. I mean, I took off of work a little bit and took my lunch early to listen to this jackass talk about stuff. He's not a president. He's a guy that's a
bad boy.
Down. Thank you for calling in, Jeff. Before you go any farther, we're going to cut that off.
You know, I listened to that speech to the president today.
Mm-hmm. I did.
And
You know what? I think Jeff and Mitt Romney are the same person.
I think so, too.
Well, Jeff, I'm hot and bothered, too. Well, okay, I will mention about the president, but I also want to say, as a member of the executive committee of the King County Republican Party, I say you should vote Republican.
Well,
but
here's the thing. Republican locally.
Here's the thing. I will make sure we take care of business and actually do what we're supposed to do and become the principal party. I'm working on that.
Well, good luck, sir, because it certainly hasn't happened up to this point.
Did you listen to the speech for the president today?
I was working. No.
Okay. So I was working too, but I heard it on the radio, and I had to turn it up. Either President Obama just woke up from a nap, or he is just – I mean, he's kind of lost his touch. This used to be the guy that had the miracle-working tongue and could be this great orator.
He has fallen short in that regard.
All he did was complain.
But I have not heard it, so I cannot comment. But let me address one thing Jeff said. And Jeff's,
that he's hot and bothered?
That he's hot and bothered. And Jeff goes on this rant about this is Jeff's typical thing. The bottom line is Rich Marks, Geneva Alderman, who actually is a fiscally conservative Republican.
And former former pop singer from the 90s. Everybody knows.
Yes, with a great mullet.
I know.
And said to me, you know what the problem is, Jeff? People need to, and I can't use the word I used, bleep and vote in primaries. And I work with these statistics all the time in the clerk's office, and he's right. We don't vote in primaries, especially non-presidential year primaries. And that's what's got moderate Republicans terrified. As Bill Maher put it, someone crazier than them is waiting to take their place. People, if you want this bleep to
and
stop...
And Bill Maher should know crazy.
He should. If you want this bleep to stop, get off your fat behinds, now I sound like the other Jeff, and vote in primaries. They make a huge amount of difference.
You know, I want to go... we're going to be wrapping up
and
just a couple minutes
terrible
here. This has been a very fast-paced show today. But back to seriousness, you know, property taxes are serious. And I kind of want to point, paint the picture, is that Collar County, Illinois property taxes are significantly higher than even the city of Chicago or Cook County, is because the Illinois Springfield politicians give the school aid to Chicago schools, but not Collar County schools. So our property taxes are much higher. Let's look at an example here. And you can also look up at alanskillcorn.com, go why Chicago property taxes are higher than the Collar counties. You know, that article's on there.
Lower?
But
Chicago property taxes are lower?
No, they're lower. Lower.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, suburbs are higher. Look at Michael Madigan. He has about a $500,000 home. He only pays $4,500 a year in property taxes. He only pays a sliver of that to schools there. Okay.
Right.
Look at our homes here in Kane County. And the average home in Kane County is under $200,000, yet we pay more than $5,000 in taxes. We actually pay more to our school than he pays total.
Right.
And because the system's rigged, and I want to make people aware of that.
Well, in Kane County, when you read through, which I have done, Illinois county law, Kane County is accepted. Kane County has its own set of rules completely, Ellen.
Cook
County. Now
yeah,
I'm Cook, putting an Ellen.
Just to let
Cook
people
County
know,
has its own
Cook
rule
County, book. you only pay on 25% of appraised value. We're here in the Collar Counties. The rest of the state of Illinois, actually,
right.
You pay on one-third of the value.
Yeah.
So there's an immediate advantage right there. And when is the last time there's been a referendum in Chicago? The last one that passed was in the 70s. The last one that was tried and failed was in the 80s. They just don't raise taxes.
Although,
there.
As a virtually almost lifelong Cook County, and there are other, what's the word I'm looking
well,
for?
Well, parking
drawbacks
and things
to living
like that.
In Cook County, like speed cameras, red light cameras.
And we'll get into that. But also, I wanted to point out a couple Tea Partiers because you're really hard on Tea Parties, but there are local people that are doing the job. Frank Matano-Tano on U46, who recently was elected. You know, I know
your
sometimes
friend.
you were kind of angry at Terry Gavin. But consider him Tea Party-ish.
But
he's part of the Elgin City Council.
When he goes off on fluoride in the water, he loses effectiveness.
He very well might.
Your
but
friend
he's
Carol, what's her last name?
It's on the tip of my tongue.
Carol
West Suburban
Mosley Braun.
No, from West Suburban Patriots. Yes,
yeah, she is a
she's
fine
a hardcore
getting
people registered to vote,
right.
Things like that. And to be honest, the people that are left in the Tea Party. Probably shouldn't have used that word, the scratch left out. The people that are still around from the Tea Party are the people that are activists. And you know what? They were probably activists before, but they didn't have a label before. And it's kind of unfair that the media has a label them like they do.
I think they bring it upon themselves. I mean, it's funny. They're the ones that called themselves teabaggers.
So, again, they did not call themselves teabaggers. The president did.
No. They
don't
they
forget.
To them. I found the stuff. I had to prove it to my editors, Alan, but go ahead.
Well, you had to prove it to your editors because you probably made it up or found on a blog, unsighted blog. But I want to remind people, firstward.net for the podcast. Also, AlanSkillcorn.com. And I'm going to throw up that Forbes article there. I'm going to throw up the chart of the Dow Jones Industrial Average there.
But don't believe him.
And probably a few other interesting things. You can follow me on Twitter at Alan Skillicorn. And since I started the show about 10, 11 months ago, I've almost doubled my Twitter followers.
I should get back to Twitter.
So if you want to hear constant updates – and none of this blah, 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 mumble jumble from Jeff. Just go on to my site or my Twitter account.
And if you want the truth, go to my site. We'll talk to you later. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
This is Jeff Swoboda, Chief of Police for the City of Elgin. You're listening to WRMN 1410 in Elgin.
IRN USA Radio News, I'm Hope Duggar. The Justice Department has brought fresh charges against former Blackwater Worldwide security contractors over a deadly 2007 shooting on the streets of Baghdad. The grand jury indictment announced Thursday charges four men with voluntary manslaughter and other crimes. The case stems from the shooting of 17 Iraqi civilians. Blackwater security